It's time for Lunch Hour Reviews.
He was licking me!
Lunch Hour Reviews.
Man, I ate until he burst.
You eating Jadis!
Speeding time. I'm Mindy.
And I'm Darren.
And we are the Rance Macabre, covering all things horror.
With a new episode every Macabre Monday, we explore the genre with sharp focus and deep production.
We want you to love scary movies as much as we do, so we don't overshare plots or give spoilers. The Rance Macabre. Cutting,
cultured,
and curated.
I am not supposed to be here.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's probably not that big a deal. But when I emerge with a beard, like I've been rescued from a desert island.
The beard did surprise me because I felt like I have seen you recently, but this beard popped up out of nowhere.
Oh, that's the thing. I grow facial hair at a glacial pace. So this has been going since I was unemployed. This is my unemployed beard.
Ah, I see. So,
or depression beard.
Oh, nice. I like it. I mean, I like to call it like fun employment.
I'm having some fun.
Yeah. It's always fun when you go down to like the State Department or whatever to get your fun employment checks.
So we've got a lot of movies and
you've had nothing but time.
I've been doing a lot of work on this show. It's not all free
you
time.
You watch movies while you edit our show.
Not always, but sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know how you do that.
Yeah,
I have laser focus. When I edit, I do not move from my seat for 5 hours probably.
You know what it is? When I'm on a tight deadline crunch, if I'm editing Sunday night, there's no way I've got anything
That's
playing in the
background. That's because I save mine till Sunday because I like to live on the edge.
So if I'm working throughout the week, sometimes I play stuff in the background. But yeah, I've got a list of stuff I've watched that I'm just going to say like, Need it. Like baseball cards of just like bad movies to skip and some to look out for.
Fair.
But we're going to start out. Well, you're going to start us out.
I'm going to start out
with one that you saw a little while ago.
Yeah, it was a little while ago. 2016's The Wailing. Listen.
You already sound so enthused.
You know, if I had to just give it a review, I would say skip it. And then we'd move on. But, this is a long show. So.
Interesting, because this made it onto a lot of people's
People
best of 2016.
It. And I wanted to love it. Like, everyone put it on their list. And I was like, oh, I'm missing out. I need to see this, blah, blah, blah. Firstly, this makes me sound like a dummy. But it's 156 minutes long. That's too freaking long.
That's pretty long for a horror movie. I will grant you that.
And very much in the vein of like Wes Craven bumbling cops, this is. And there's these great horror moments as far as like this virus or this zombie or this ghost. You don't really know as you're going through it.
Okay.
But then it's juxtaposed with these terrible bumbling cops and silliness. So silly. And I mean,
I don't usually expect
some
that
silly
out of
things,
Korean horror.
This is ridiculous.
Hmm.
Yeah, and 156 minutes. If you cut the silliness of the cops, that would be excellent. I think it would be good if we stuck with the real story. Because at the heart of the story is a father who is a cop and his daughter who now gets possessed by this, like, demon thing. It's very vague, and I'm being vague.
A Korean Yeti? Is that where the wailing comes in?
No, it looks more like a zombie than anything.
Okay.
But because some people should want to watch it and probably will want to watch it, I'm not going to be spoiling it or anything.
Sure.
But basically,
it is on Netflix streaming now.
It is, and that's sadly how I watched it. But it is this great story of this father and his love for his daughter. The daughter is played by Kim Hwan-hee, and she is so good. She's so endearing. I wish the whole movie was about the daughter. But then the cop goes into town and has these silly friends and then silly things happen, and then
I watched the trailer for this a while back, I guess before it came to Netflix, and it looked like a very like almost solemn, creepy investigation, a little bit like sort of Wicker Man in terms of this guy going into this town that's dealing with this thing, or
like Nick Cage Wicker Man. Sure. It's just like it is like this investigation, but I really hope that cops in Korea aren't like this. Like, this is a terrible depiction of like dumbery.
Interesting.
Wandering around. Yeah.
I don't know enough about Korean politics, but I'm curious if it is kind of a statement on them kind of saying like, you know, fuck the hierarchy kind of.
I don't know, because they're in the middle of like, it's a very small town that everyone lives in. And I will say it was beautiful. It shows these like beautiful landscapes of Korea, and the house that the cop lives in is just amazing because it's a traditional house with little, each room is a separate house.
Oh.
Kind of thing. It's really great and it's beautiful, and the filming in the forest part is amazing. Then they have this like misdirect of a villain that we have to go on, and then that's spoiled, and then it just continues on and on.
It never ends.
Never ends. Fell asleep for a little while, woke back up, said, I can't continue watching this. I turned it off. I finally went back to it like a week later after the first time because I just needed to finish it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a payoff at all.
Oh, really?
No, after all it was 156 minutes. I'll never get back.
Strong? Oh, that's a bummer.
No. You know I'll stick it out to the end. But
sure,
this
you have watched some horrible things.
I know, but this was not good. It was way too silly. The pacing
was
ridiculous.
I was not expecting silly out of all that. Bumbling cops, that's not... Okay. So, I cut you off.
No, I mean, I have no more to say, and I don't understand why everyone liked it. And so I feel like maybe I'm on crazy pills.
Am I, with my abundant free time, I'm going to watch it.
I'm sure you will.
I'm going to watch it. I might fast forward. I don't have a lot of patience for dumb cop.
I don't know. You'll probably like it.
I don't know.
With that, I think
you just presented alt facts, and I'm not putting up with it.
Maybe this is an alternative. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is a really good movie.
You remember that time you were in the Bowling Green Massacre, and you totally agreed with that critic who I hate and I think is full of shit. And some of this is true. But not all of it.
Okay,
none
true.
Of it.
Yeah, I mean, you can try and watch it. It's really up to you. I don't think it's good. I don't think it's worth watching. I don't understand why anyone liked it. I can't deal with it. Written and directed, though, by one man. So it's clearly like a single vision. It's not like torn up in the editing. You know what I'm saying?
Right. By the sounds of it, there was very little editing.
Yeah, it seemed to just run and run and run.
So, okay. Mindy's a pass on the whaling. Big pass.
Yeah. Hard pass.
So recently, because it is on Netflix streaming now, you finally caught It Follows.
Yeah, because you know I won't go into the theater.
I thought you had seen this a long time ago.
I know you had. You watched it in the theater, right?
I did. Yeah. It was fine. At the time, it was just a funny circumstance where the theater itself was kind of chintzy, attempting at like the leather recliner comfortable seating, they weren't great seats, and they all came from like Bob's factory outlet warehouse. Yeah. So people were constantly moving their feet up and down and shifting, and it was just a soundtrack of farts. The whole movie. People talk about loving the soundtrack to It Follows because it's a throwback.
You mean the fart sounds.
Right. So yeah, at the time I was fine with it. I was entertained. Rachel didn't like it, but you just caught it. I was under the impression you had seen this a long time ago.
No, I just caught it.
First thoughts.
Well, now I know certain things in retrospect, and I know how everyone now talks about it. And it's one of those things that, especially in like the horror community, sometimes if something becomes popular, it's then not good. You know, like,
yeah, if it gets too well accepted by the mainstream.
But I'll tell you, I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot. I mean, was it better than something like The Guest? No, totally not.
Let me cut you off right there.
No. But I liked it. I really liked it.
Yeah, upon second viewing, I was happy. It held up. And I think it takes a beating because it was a festival darling. It was...
Everyone is so mean about it.
Yeah, I think because it kind of borrows from a lot of places without credit. But so written and directed by David Robert Mitchell, it was a festival darling. It did really well in terms of like mainstream critics giving it a look. Mm-hmm. And they're like, normally I don't review horror, but this was quite entertaining.
Right.
I will say this is the best horror movie I've seen all year.
Right.
In all fairness, it was the only horror movie that critic had seen all year. And
totally.
So
always
us,
the case.
Us horror fans are kind of... you know, looking at its weak points and kind of saying that, like, all right, well, this other movie did it better, et cetera,
right,
et cetera.
Exactly. I mean, I think, though, if you would compare it to something else that was so, so popular, like Babadook, I would take It Follows over Babadook.
I think it's
that's
a
my,
lot
I love that style.
Lighter and maybe a little more entertaining. Yeah, I it's funny. I had forgotten that it was a Dimension picture.
Yeah.
And when that was the first title that came up, I was like, oh yeah, it kind of does have like a throwback 90s yeah. like teen horror movie feel.
I love that feel. I think, you know, I like Mike Monroe. I think she's so good.
Yeah.
I think, you know, because of the guest, whatever.
Yeah, no, but she's good.
I
yeah.
thought it was great how they actually didn't really indulge, even though the film is about sex.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was kind of great how they just didn't indulge in that. Into the point where the sex scene in the car made me go, oh, was that the sex? Is the sex, is it done now? What's happening? And, you know, it was yeah. so not over the top. It was just kind of a matter of fact, you know, situation.
So one of the criticisms it does take is that it kind of plays fast and loose with its own rules. And I think they kind of do that by not dwelling mm-hmm. on sure. circumstances that might contribute to the following.
Right.
Okay. You awake?
What are you doing?
You're not going to believe me, and I need you to remember what I'm saying.
This thing, it's going to follow you. Somebody gave it to me, and I passed it to you.
Wherever you are, it's somewhere walking straight for you. All you can do is pass it along to someone else.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it works as a very pure allegory for like STDs and AIDS specifically, as far as like the, you know, inherited, I don't know, we'll say like inherited cultural guilt or
right.
or just, you know, the actual circumstances surrounding like the transmitting of sexually transmitted diseases or infections. Yeah, and I don't know. I think all that stuff worked. I was far less critical this time mm-hmm. watching it than I had been. And yeah, I don't know. There's nothing wrong with it. It's fine.
Even at face value. So if I really don't want to read into it, which for the most part, I honestly don't. I love taking a movie at face value and don't care about allegories sometimes so much.
Okay. Yeah.
Take it at face value. I love the idea of a ghost monster that walks. Like, literally has to walk everywhere. But then I have questions like, can it get on a plane? So if I went, like, to China, does it have to walk across the United States and then the ocean? Or can it fly there? I had a lot of questions about that, actually.
I hadn't really thought about, yeah, air travel. Because, they are landlocked. It does take place in, like, in run-down Detroit.
Right. But it's like, then I could fly to California and then stay there until it found me in California. Then I'll fly back to New York and then stay there. You know what I'm saying? I guess that's if I have a lot of money at my disposal.
Yeah, and I guess one of the issues that they do deal with as far as kids, and I love the component of like a ragtag group of teenagers who are just like, you know, lower middle class, mm-hmm. kind of looking for shit to do.
Kids that are just kind of living with mom and dad still, and I love that. Like,
yeah, and when they, you know, find one of their friends is haunted by a sex ghost, then they're just like, all right, well, let's try and problem solve. Let's work together and figure this out.
Exactly.
Yeah, I
thought it was really cute and I thought it was really fun. The soundtrack is great, not gonna lie. It's
yeah,
a great soundtrack. I didn't have it interrupted by farting. Well, unless it was Mike my own, I suppose, because I watch these in my house.
Far less distracting.
Exactly.
When it's your own.
And I thought, you like that? And I thought it cost a little over $1 million to make. Like, I thought it looked great. I thought it was a good film.
Yeah, yeah. I did recognize, and I don't have his name in front of me, but the losery kid who's her friend, who's like, you know, was the first boy she ever kissed or whatever,
the neighbor kid. Yeah.
Yeah. He's in a very good movie called Dark Summer, which last time I checked is still on Netflix streaming. And this was a sleeper that it was a solid flick. It does some of the things that It Follows tries to do, but better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got, I mean, overall, the story holds together. It's really great. I really like Dark Summer, and it's the same kid who, like, I don't know. I got my fingers crossed that, like, he will grow up to be, like, a handsome, striking guy. Like the About a Boy kid.
I think he's, like, 24. He's not like a tiny child.
He's very skinny, so he's been playing high. I also watched him in The Good Neighbor with James Caan recently. That is less a good movie. It's not a good movie. But he's in it also playing a high school kid. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's always kind of nerdy. Like I just, you know, he might be the next like DJ Qualls.
Yeah, maybe. Why not? Right?
Yeah, just forever playing a teenager. But Dark Summer is one to check out as well on Netflix streaming. As far as my other notes, I have with exclamation and question mark, hospital sex, really? And yes. I mean, you talked about the car sex being kind of underwhelming. The hospital sex was like sad. Like,
no, I thought the Gilchrist, like her and Paul, that sex was the saddest of the sex. That was the last of the series.
It's kind of a bummer that, like, for all this haunting, there wasn't even, like, I mean, in an 80s slasher, like, at
no
least,
one's
like,
at you, least enjoying it.
Yeah. In any movie that this is kind of playing homage to, like, sex and drugs look like fun in those movies, and they are punished for them.
Yeah.
In this movie, it's just, like, it's sad.
I think that's kind of the point, because I think it didn't want to be too, like, indulgent in it.
Mm.
So you didn't get, she's wearing a bra, but she's not wearing, like, a push-up bra. She's wearing, like, a bralette. You know what I'm saying? Nothing is, like, overly sexual about it.
Yeah.
And, like, every single person's a good-looking person in this movie, but no one's made to be, like, a bombshell.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. Worth noting, a long time ago on one of these Lunch Hour Reviews, I talked about how I was watching a lot of Twilight Zone on Netflix streaming, and how I came across a number of different episodes of the Twilight Zone that were clearly influential to, like, modern horror.
Right.
And given that, like, the Twilight Zone had a great cast of writers and whatnot, but I think it's underplayed in terms of, like, what filmmakers and people have seen. And it maybe gets into the show, their subconscious, and all of a sudden they're taking credit for their own work when it's clearly influenced. So, like, It Follows kind of exists as a Twilight Zone movie.
Yeah.
There's an episode called Nothing in the Dark from the third season, and it's a standout because Robert Redford is in it.
Ooh.
And so the episode, it's again, it's, like, very low tech. It's very bare bones. There is an old woman. She's a shut-in. She refuses to let anyone into her apartment. She rarely does, like, supply runs to feed herself, etc. But she's terrified of going outside because death is always looming. She sees it everywhere.
Okay.
And you kind of take her as a nut job until at her door is a panicky police officer who is wounded, and he's begging to be let inside her house. He, you know, he needs refuge. Maybe there's more danger outside. That's Robert Redford.
Mm-hmm.
And because he is the first person she's spoken to in a long time, you know, the way you kind of go into confession with a stranger,
right,
and just oversharing. And then when she reveals that, like, she's terrified of death, she's, you know, essentially a shut-in on account of that terror. And then it becomes more apparent than, like, Robert Redford is there for her.
Uh-huh.
And she wasn't inventing all this. It wasn't all machinations happening in her head, that he's actually there as death incarnate.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, he's not vicious or malicious in any way, but he is kind of, like, telling, you know, he's there to, like, soothe her into the last moments.
I see.
And so it was a really creepy, it was a great episode.
Uh-huh.
And I really dug that one. And it, you know, it's one of the many Twilight Zone episodes that kind of gets represented in later movies. Like, there's Child's Play,
right,
and there's a bunch of Twilight Zone alien episodes, which, I don't know, Stephen King may or may not give credit to. So I haven't just been watching movies at home, online, on the couch, or on my tablet. I went out. The New York Horror Movie Group that I belong to gave us an invite to the free screening of Rings last week. And
okay.
So this is actually the third of the American remakes. Okay, so The Ring 2 by Hideo Nakata, who made the original Japanese 2, well, 1 and 2, and was then asked to make the American remakes sequel, which I haven't seen, but is not supposed to be good.
Is that the one with Naomi Watts?
The second of those, yes.
Oh, I've only seen one with her. Then I gave up, I think.
Well, that's the first, yeah.
Oh, no, then I've seen both of them.
And I think that was Gore Verbinski. You saw the sequel?
I've seen both of them.
Oh, okay. Any memory of the second one?
Yes. I kind of liked it. I've seen them both. I probably won't watch this other one because I don't care anymore. I feel like I don't care.
Yeah, I think I'm going to, any inkling,
I don't like The Grudge anymore. I don't want to watch any of that. Done with it.
So, Rings, directed by F. Javier Gutierrez, who's a Spanish filmmaker who before this made Before the Fall. It's a Spanish language film.
Mm-hmm.
Written by a lot of people for the studio.
No need.
And it shows, because the story has features it borrows from, incidentally, It Follows, and a little bit of Don't Breathe in there as well.
Oh, really?
It's kind of like a studio was noticing, they're like, oh, Kids these days love kids running away from blind men. Like, shit like that. Like, it's a little formulaic. Biggest problem, though, is that it's not scary.
Oh.
It's a mediocre movie. It's not bad, but it doesn't aspire to much.
Well, I think, you know, the very first time you ever see Samara come out of the TV in the first film,
mm-hmm.
like, that was a truly, like, wow kind of moment. And mm-hmm. I don't think you could ever recreate something like that.
No, and it becomes a challenge because they want to update the story. And, like, what if it's not a TV that she's coming out of? What if it's a phone? And,
oh, God.
Or, like...
Like Pulse?
People
watched that. It was called Pulse.
or if it happens on a plane and, like, there you are at your JetBlue watching your DirecTV and
it just comes
Samara.
On the little tiny TV on the back of
yeah,
the...
Yeah, but, like, all of them. Yeah, so shit like that. There are these visual moments where, like, they were selling a trailer. They uh-huh. were collecting their trailer moments and tying it together with some pretty loose storylines. Mm-hmm. And then we've got a little bit of, like, the Scooby Gang trying to figure things out. None of it was especially interesting. John Galecki, who...
Oh,
I guess,
like him.
Yeah, I remember him. I loved him on Roseanne because
yeah,
he was
yeah.
kind of like – he was like a funny twerp at
yeah,
that point.
Yeah, I love
but, like,
David on Roseanne.
Babyface is still playing like – I don't know what he does on The Big Bang. I think he's a college professor at this point.
Yeah,
but,
he's a professor.
They've typecast him because that's what he is here.
Well,
and in this
know.
Case, he's studying the video. They've essentially figured out the rules and are studying it the way one would like an STD trial.
How does he – watch it without watching it?
Well, he doesn't keep watching it, and I think they...
Oh, so if you won't turn it off halfway through, you don't get it?
Something like that. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It also stars Vincent D'Onofrio, who, you know, good for him. Matilda Anna Ingrid Lutz. That's a mouthful.
What a name.
She's our main character. She's not great. Her Italian accent makes a couple undocumented appearances in the movie.
Oh, wow.
And it's not great. But yeah, like I said, its biggest crime is that it's not scary.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of there. It's for people who are obsessed about Ring movies. Yeah, see it.
Yeah.
See it. But like for someone expecting to see anything you haven't seen before, no.
Right.
It's not there.
I remember when The Ring first came out, you know, the first one. And I think in America, we really hadn't seen anything quite like that.
Sure. Yeah.
And I remember it was so surprising. And it really was scary at that time because we had never seen – we had nothing to associate it with. And then we got really, really flooded with, you know, the Grudge and that Jessica Alba movie. And,
The Eye.
Yeah.
Yeah. The American remake, which was made by New French Extremity guys. Yeah. But I didn't see that one because it was reviewed terribly.
Yeah, I didn't. I think I did see it, but I don't even know anything about it.
Yeah. I love the original Ring. I love the tone
mm-hmm.
it hits. And, you know, it sort of deserves a little bit of credit for, like, being good enough that Americans actually started giving a shit about J-horror. And that led to a whole wave unto itself. That's all I've got on Rings. It's kind of meh.
And at least you didn't pay for it, because that's my thing. That's
yeah.
Like, that's even part of it. Number one, I hate being with all the people in the movie theater. And then number two, I hate, like, having to pay to be with all these people in the movie theater. I don't know why I live in a city that's, like, so many people. I do. Here I am, just hating life.
You hate people.
But I love gatherings. Isn't it ironic?
The last movie that we both watched, I was really happy that you wanted to talk about it, because... Number one, it combines lots of things that I enjoy. Creepypasta. Love creepypasta. Love reading those stories because I like to pretend like they're real when I read them. And
so,
then I get
so do
really
these girls.
Scared. Well, I don't go around stabbing people. And then it combines documentary, real crime, true crime stuff. So we have 2016's Beware the Slender Man.
The palest man. The blackest suit. Bigger than the tallest brute. Fear the man. The Slender Man, for he can do what no one can.
Came upon a 12-year-old female. She appears to be stabbed. She appears to be what? Stabbed? Stabbed?
Wire and Geyser are accused of stabbing the friend and leaving her for dead.
Police say the suspects were inspired by a character on a website.
Slender Man, a faceless ghoul.
We never thought she could possibly believe that it was real.
2016 is when it came out. Finally, now, at the beginning of this year in 2017, it was released now on HBO. And love it. But I want to know more. I want to know more about everything. Like, I kind of want there to be, like, a serial about it so that I can continuously keep, like, learning.
It almost seemed like this could have functioned as a, like, Making a Murderer series. Mm-hmm. Because it's fascinating from a number of different angles. And we'll start talking about it. But how about a little bit of history on the Slender Man? The Slender Man meme began in June 2009 when a competition on the comedy web forum Something Awful asked for ideas for a modern myth with which to terrify people. One contributor, Eric Knudsen, using the pseudonym Victor Surge, responded by posting two faked photographs purportedly from the mid-1980s showing a tall, sinister figure lurking behind groups of children. Knudsen attached some vague text suggesting 14 young people and the photographer had gone missing. And from there, it inspired. Like, it
they're great photos.
Paid its function
he
as far as...
He did a great job.
Yeah, it's a creepy one. Yeah,
they're excellent. You know, it's a faceless guy, which really reminds me. I'll always think, whenever I see someone that's face is similar to that, I always go to the nurses in Silent Hill.
Yeah.
Because I think that was the first time I ever saw something like that, you know. And so this takes the nurses to a whole new level because Slender Man's giant tall person.
Seems
to have Marfan's kind of, because he's got really long hands, he's very tall.
I picture him as mostly long in the middle, but no, he's got long legs.
His arms are long too.
Yeah, the most haunting image, or at least my favorite, is Slender Man holding the hand of a very, very small girl.
Right.
Yeah, just the dichotomy of, like, someone who is enormous and someone who is not is pretty creepy. But so it spread from there to creepypasta, and people started writing stories, and it becomes its own meme.
There's, like, fan fiction about Slender Man.
Yeah, I didn't know any
weird.
Of this. I actually first came across it when we were doing the video game horror episode. Mm-hmm. And there's a very basic sort of look around and don't get killed video game of the Slender Man. And I was watching that. I was like, why are they so frightened? Like, he's not all that scary. He's just kind of lumbering in the background.
Right.
And so, but I was completely unaware of the culture behind it. I had no idea. And then, you know, this crime happens, and, well, I guess actually the crime had happened before, but none of this really stuck with me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this film was directed by Irene Taylor Brodsky, and this crime happens. It's two 12-year-old girls stabbing their 12-year-old friend to appease Slender Man and become his little evil helpers, seemingly.
Yeah.
However, they figure out, these two girls, that because they're obsessed with this creepypasta, there's a lot of dissociative kind of elements to these two girls.
Yeah.
And they want to be his proxies because they're – it's seemingly – here's where it kind of gets a little fucked up. I mean – more fucked up is that they don't really have a clear goal in mind. It's like, occasionally they'll say, oh, well, I didn't want Slender Man to kill my family. But then the same, like, in the next breath, then they're like, well, we just want to go live with Slender Man.
Right.
So I'm a little confused.
He's got, like, a
big house.
Palace in the woods
where
he and all his proxies stay. But
it's
not as if they ever describe that place as, like, fucking Disneyland. It's just kind of...
Big mansion.
They want to be with a big creepy man? That's
Slender Mansion.
That's a...
No, it's such a strange thing. But what I love about it, because I do love urban legend, urban folklore, kind of modern day folklore, and this is a definite situation like that. The Slender Mansion exists wherever you locally are. So for them, because of where they were located, it actually is in Wisconsin, the Slender Mansion. And the two little kids are going to go walk after they commit this murder, go walk and find Slender Mansion.
For miles.
Yeah.
They're 12 years old. So it's kind of like urban myths and legends and all that shit is fun to, like, think about in the context of urban myth and legend and I mean, even fucking memes. But these girls don't, and you mentioned there's some dissociative disorders at play where, like, they cannot differentiate reality from these online stories that they're reading.
Right.
And that's really unsettling, because it's kind of like these girls were failed at a number of levels.
This film walks us through their court case, and I kind of wondered, sometimes when you get these big court cases, like something even like West Memphis 3, that was a situation where they just fell into it.
Yeah.
Like they went and thought, these kids are guilty, this. Then they go there and discover all these things. And I wonder if Irene Brodsky thought, I'm going to discover something further. But instead, what it is just a blatant, like, wow, this is, you don't learn anything further. It just opens up this whole story. And you don't think anything differently, I don't think, of the girls.
Yeah.
It just is what it is.
Right. Well, you don't learn anything in terms of, like, the cultural impact of Slender Man or anything like that. What you do learn about is, like, the girls themselves.
Right.
And that's kind of the rabbit hole that the documentary goes down. But, yeah, I went through a roller coaster of emotions, if you will. But from the beginning to end of this documentary, like, even my notes represent a number of points where I was like, I think I'm figuring this out, and then what the fuck? What? Well, that's new information. How? What?
Right.
So the start of the documentary, I felt it did hearken to the, like, 1980s Satanic Panic, and you mentioned mm-hmm. the West Memphis 3, and the sort of, like, you know, cultural slap back on, you know, pointing the finger at everything mm-hmm. that could possibly be contributing to America's ills. And so the idea of, like, metal music or, you know,
comic
Satan
code.
Worship, the comic code going back before that, Dungeons and Dragons
right.
was demonized. Like, they were just picking shit out of a hat that they weren't
right.
familiar with, and drew pockets of people. And modern day, that is Slender Man for children. Like, that is Creepypasta. And, you know, if you're not looking over, like, what your kids are reading and taking in, mm-hmm. and they take it as truth, then, like, I don't know. That component of parenting really scares the shit out of me. The idea that, like, you are responsible for this person, and you hope and pray and you work that you make a good person.
Right.
And you do what you can. I can't imagine it factors in that, like, you're also concerned that your kid is going to be a weapon. And
yeah,
and
what is that movie with Tilda Swinton?
We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Yeah. And, like, yeah. that – when I watched that movie, I was terrified to
yeah,
like,
it's upsetting.
Ever have a child, because, like, oh, my God, what if I have this tiny little killer? But at the heart of this, what's really interesting is the mom, one of the moms, and, you know, she goes, well, you know, I had Stephen King books. She's like trying to find anything that could cause these things. And I think yeah. to myself, like, I don't know. I was raised in always around horror. That's how I grew up. And I, so far, knock on wood, I guess, haven't killed anybody.
Yeah. I was thinking about that in terms of what our parents did and said to, like, reiterate, like, what's real and what's not.
Right.
Because so my memory specifically is, like, I discovered that Santa Claus wasn't real because I found my parents wrapping presents.
Yes.
And, like, now as an adult, I kind of feel like the parents should take some fucking credit for all the work that it took to buy fucking presents for kids. Like, I don't know why we're even pretending Santa Claus is a thing. It's fucking silly.
I think you do it to perpetuate it so your kid doesn't ruin it for others.
But isn't that, I mean, that's a crazy concept.
And so we just
concept.
Have to always keep doing it.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's the emperor has no clothes. Like, everybody, come on, let's knock this shit off.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know, because there comes a point, though, but these girls now are 12 years old. They really, let's say if they were developmental in the same development as a normal 12-year-old, they should know
yeah.
what's real and what's not. But clearly something is at play here. The next kind of thing that the documentary kind of starts to bring up is now these girls are being tried as adults in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And that's terrifying.
For
not only being tried as adults, being tried as competent adults. And
yeah.
that's where it becomes a little like, ooh, this is crazy. It's getting a little crazy there.
Yeah. In the early portions of the police, like, I'm going to call it interrogation because technically that is what it is, but it was really just these girls mm-hmm. like they didn't talk to a lot of people. And so when they're sitting across from someone who's asking them questions, like, they just answer the questions. Like, they're
yeah.
just sharing is
yeah.
what they're doing. And so we get a little bit of insight. And so it's between Anissa, who did not do the stabbing. Morgan did
right.
the stabbing upon, like, order, as she
right.
as she puts
it. Right.
It
seems like Anissa's the one who kind of was the ringleader. I mean, everyone's trying to establish some sort of blame for everyone else in this story, or in this movie.
Pretty early on, Morgan doesn't display a lot of emotion around it. Both the girls are pretty detached from the incident itself. Yes. And when I heard Morgan speak, and given she's only a 12-year-old, and frankly, like schizophrenia, any therapist is pretty skittish about diagnosing that in like fucking teenagers, let alone 12-year-olds. So, but when I heard Morgan kind of lay it off on Anissa without any emotion, I was like, is she a little sociopath? Like, is she ratting out her friend who's in the next interrogation room next door? And that made it really interesting. Like I said, as far as like the roller coaster of like what is going on and who is responsible.
It's everyone else to blame.
Yeah.
I thought interesting, there's no adult in that room besides the detectives.
Yeah.
And I never obviously mean to place blame, but it is 2014 and we've all seen West Memphis 3. We've all seen – no, I guess haven't seen Making a Murderer yet, but we know that this exists. And just in general, I would never let my underage child be alone in a room with another adult to say something that could be so damning.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so that was like scary and a little terrifying. And it's one of the things that are actually challenging coming up this year.
And I could see that because even during the trial itself, the cop does take some heat, but it does seem to be glossed over, especially in terms of the outcome.
And there's a scene where he has her sign a confession.
A 12-year-old sign of confession.
That doesn't mean anything. And what I don't know what they ever hope to achieve out of something like that. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. I felt like Anissa's parents passed the buck a little bit while talking about her obsession with the iPad and sort of like handing it off to like that internet, that corrupting influence of the internet.
Yeah.
We didn't see it coming.
There's a lot of everyone's passing the buck.
There was so much more at play than the fucking internet.
Yeah.
And, well, frankly, Slender Man. And those, you know, so as not to, like, give all the spoilers away, I won't talk about specifics. But in terms of, like, involvement and just honesty, I mean, when we're talking about mental health, like, at least let a human being know the cards they were dealt. Yes. Because a lot of people out there don't even know their own fucking diagnosis. And so when you are looking at the world thinking that's an objective viewpoint, and it turns out like there is a lineage of bad judgment and just like mental illness, shouldn't people know?
There is an interesting moment in it when we finally meet Morgan's father.
Yeah.
And I don't know, all during the film, and I don't know how you're supposed to act, I guess, but all through this film, Jackson, my husband and I are like the interpersonal displaying of emotions are not exactly appropriate for every situation that we're in this film.
Okay.
Like, it seemed like, I don't know, I would be really, really upset, but I don't know. And the only person who actually shows some, like, real, honest emotion is the guy who's probably on some MAOIs.
Yeah.
And is diagnosed with a disorder. He's probably on quite a few drugs for this disorder, and he's the only one who's actually showing any real natural emotion, and that was really interesting.
I think he had an exclusive perspective to the scenario. So Anissa's dad is there throughout, and he's the one I was talking about as far as like passing the buck, where he says like, I'm angry at the situation, but clearly not understanding most of the scenario, because you know, first of all, like it's a strange, just I'm just broadly frustrated, like about all of these things. Whereas Morgan's dad, coming from a perspective not dissimilar to Morgan herself, recognizes that like the impact this kind of like, I mean, it's secrecy only because people refuse to talk about it. And that kind of, I find that incredibly frustrating. And I don't know if it's like the, you know, I don't want to be a dickhead and say it's like the Midwestern niceness when what would do you well is a little like frank honesty. And that, so I found that frustrating that like the one, you know, he comes into play later in the movie is kind of like the heavy that they're waiting for.
Right.
As far as like, you know, not actually.
And they're like, we'll drop this in on y'all. So yeah. You can mold this over now.
But it just it paints a better, more full picture of the scenario.
When that drops, it really opens up the story. And you really have to sit there and think, because there is a specific situation for that side.
Who's Slender Man?
He's
this tall, faceless man who preys on children?
Ever met him?
Not exactly.
Tell me about him.
He watches you.
Because, yeah, you're listening to them, both of them, talking. You're like, you're a tiny sociopath.
Yeah, it does feel that way. Yeah, you know, the way her friend, so later in the movie, there's a sort of group call with Anissa, who is incarcerated, mm-hmm. and her family and one of her friends, mm-hmm. who wasn't a school friend. They kind of point out that she was like a local friend who didn't know Anissa's reputation in school.
Right.
She took at face value that Anissa's telling her she has friends and she's, you know, different in these ways. And then when that friend starts sort of giving context, like Anissa starts to feel a lot like Carrie White in terms of, you know, this person who lives in their own world and, mm-hmm. and is kind of shunned and is like desperate for any sort of friendship. And so when she finds Morgan, it was this bizarre recipe of like someone who doesn't differentiate between like fact and fiction, mm-hmm. and someone who is like emotionally detached, mm-hmm. and is a lot of like, well, let's do it and see what happens. And and it's like, oh, you have an imaginary friend? Well, he's my imaginary friend now too. And like just goes on having that imaginary friend. Like these are terrible circumstances. These are
then
scary.
My next thought is, so they're being tried as adults and horrific stabbing 19 times. The girl almost dies. It is.
I was pretty stunned that she survived. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a wild case. It's interesting though that I don't know. I feel like domestic violence gets to the point of like stabbing and stuff like that, but they don't really spend very much time in jail actually. So like, is this whole thing over like 5 years? You know what I'm saying? Or because they're acting like they're going to give these girls crazy amounts of time. But if the murder didn't happen, what's the longest consequence here?
Right. It was frustrating that it seemed, even while the judge was speaking what seemed initially like compassion, mm-hmm. he later comes around to like wanting to try them as adults and like more in the state penal system rather than like the mental health
direction. They first go into the judge really quick, 2014. They're still 12-year-olds. So at that time, let's say they don't get out until they're 18, let's say, because maybe that's how Wisconsin is. That's still 6 years in jail.
Yeah.
And so I'm confused, even if they were tried as adults, they really wouldn't serve more than 6 years for an attempted murder.
Yeah,
so what's the deal? Why the trial for an adult? That I was really confused by that.
I think the Slender Man and the creepypasta, without understanding it, it does sound very cult-like. And I think some of that is just like this cultural sort of shadow that mm-hmm. still lingers from like, you know, just the what we were saying, the goofy shit from the Satanic Panic era, where like, you know, these people, the moment they don't understand something, their haunches go up. They're very, very cautious
about,
like, it just
seems,
like,
if we're talking 6 years here or 6 years here, what's the difference?
Right. And
also, you can't put a 12-year-old into an adult facility. What are you going to do with these kids?
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty frustrating when some of the mental health professionals who do speak on the subject say that, like, Morgan's still got imaginary friends. There's stuff going on in there, and it's not being addressed in the fucking penal system.
Right, and you're going to put her in a ladies' facility with 40-year-old women?
Yikes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's wild. What do you do?
But the documentary's only, you know, it's just shy of 2 hours, I think. So it's not giving us everything.
Right.
But I think if these were two girls who said, like, our friend did something we didn't like, and so one of us attacked her, yeah, they'd be out by the time they were 18. Like, it would be cut and dry. They would not think of it as anything more than a violent crime.
Right.
But they've got this, they've got a stigma attached to them through the system. And so they will never get the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
really
why the appeals are crucial. Yeah, yeah.
He was my only friend for a long time. Because
why would you hurt your only friend?
It was necessary.
I'm not going to go too deep on this, but there was a study published in Topics of Cognitive Science, but it relates to schizophrenia, and I think I've even mentioned this before, but like the cultural differences that represent themselves in people's schizophrenia, like, mm-hmm. you know, globally. And so this study sort of discovered that are, you know, so M. Night Shyamalan Split is in theaters.
Right.
And it's a pretty gross misrepresentation of mental illness in that in that case. But there is something to the violent stigma, the idea that we schizophrenics in the United States definitely have to deal with the stigma, but also commonly, like, when the voices turn negative, that apparently is pretty exclusively American.
Right.
When going through it scientifically, they're discovering that they're not exclusively bad voices. They're not negative voices. They're not necessarily encouraging people to hurt themselves or others. They're just voices. Like, they're, you know, we talk to ourselves when we're alone. Like, it's that kind of shit. But in other countries, sometimes people even describe the voices as helpful or encouraging. Right. Like, it's a different thing. And I think the stigma that we put on mental illness feeds into that, where people kind of assume that, like, if there is another voice, then it must be bad, because why would it be there?
Right, right.
But so the study is kind of interesting. It's worth checking out. Again, that was Topics in Cognitive Science, and it was about schizophrenia throughout the world. But yeah, that kind of thing I found fascinating. But I think above all, like, these are conversations people should be having. And especially like, if you're a parent and you have a pre-existing condition, like, you know, honesty is not the easy choice to go on sharing things, but like, it's important. So that'll wrap it up. This was a long one. I feel, I mean, after the last couple episodes, I need a vacation. I'm unemployed. I'm talking about needing a vacation.
That's where I'm going
with that.
But our next full episode is fun stuff.
Yeah. It's going to get busy again. But for now, you can find us on all social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, as well as we've got a Patreon page where you can find even more episodes, fully produced episodes, sketches,
Our latest killer cars.
Yeah, where we recorded in the car on a road trip. We're thinking outside the box from inside this work office box at the moment. Yeah.
We have a website at therantsmacabre.com. You can drop us little notes there. There's extra downloadable stuff there. There is a donate button. If you find us through anything like iTunes, Google Play, I don't know, all the things.
All the things, Stitcher, Internet Radio. Stitcher.
Leave us a review. Give us some stars.
So that'll do it for me. This is Darren signing off.
This is Mindy. Thanks.